Hello! Today we're going to be answering one of the great questions of strata living. What are strata managers? What do they do? Are they the bosses of us, or are we supposed to be in charge of them? We have a special guest today, Tim Sara of Strata Choice, our major sponsors, and he's going to give us the benefit of all his wisdom and experience. Now, the audio quality isn't up to the usual standards because we did this over the phone, but don't let that put you off. There's plenty of interesting stuff and a lot of fun to listen to. I'm Jimmy Thompson. This is the Flat Chat Wrap. I am with Tim Sara, who is a senior strata manager with Strata Choice, our sponsors. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Jimmy.
What are the biggest challenges facing a strata manager in New South Wales and Australia today?
Sure. I guess they're always exciting times, Jimmy. I mean, every few years it seems to be that something's happening, but I think at the moment, probably the biggest thing that's being discussed, particularly since the New Year period, is building defects. With the Opal Tower and everything that's happened there, we've seen a lot more, I guess, discussion around in the media.
Yep.
Around building defects. And so, I mean, for those that don't know, and you'd be living under a rock if you didn't, but the Opal Tower is one of many examples of buildings that are built at unfortunately, rather low standard. So we're seeing a very large number of buildings that have pretty substantial defects, and we're not just talking about some, you know, scratched cabinets or things like that. We're talking about, you know, waterproofing, structural and fire safety issues. You know, it's very, very common. Almost every building that we take on that's brand new has this issue.
So what's the strata manager's role in all this? I mean, you come into this, especially in a new building, you've just got your first, you've got a 1 year maximum initial contract. What do you do?
I mean, it's really important for us in the first stages to educate our clients. You know, a lot of people that are buying into brand new buildings are first-time owners in strata. They've lived in a house their entire life, or perhaps this is their first ever property that they're buying. And so really our role in the beginning is to educate them, to let them know that, you know, it's very important that they get a proper report done, that they seek legal advice, that they know what their rights are, and don't just rely on the goodwill of the, you know, the developer or the builder that's been involved. It's a huge part of it is really getting new clients to understand what they're up for. Unfortunately, you know, they've bought into this building and they're already having to deal with issues from day one. So I really see that as the biggest part of it. Once they understand what they're in for, they can then start to make educated decisions, you know, around whether they pursue the matter through the courts or whether they just deal with it themselves and fix the defects at their own cost. You know, there's various avenues that they can take in this.
Yep.
And so it's important that they have an experienced strata manager to guide them through that process, because there's so many different options that they can take.
Do you get much pushback from people? Nobody likes being educated.
That's very true. I mean, a lot of people don't like the message that we're giving them. You know, we're the bearer of bad news.
Yep.
We're having to tell them things that they don't want to hear. They don't want to hear that they've just bought this brand new product and all of a sudden there's faults. I mean, I liken it to buying a brand new car. If you bought a brand new car and the engine didn't start running, or, you know, the indicators didn't work, you'd be mortified.
Yeah.
Absolutely mortified. And we're talking about, you know, multi-million dollar apartments here, not just a new car.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, unfortunately, we are the ones that have to explain to them that there's a lack of consumer protection, that, you know, it's not just a case of the builder always just wandering back and fixing things, that sometimes we do have to spend money on experts and lawyers and all of that. So, yeah, it's a big part of it.
And they don't like spending money. I mean, the reality is, for a lot of people moving into apartments, you've pretty much exhausted your savings. You know, if it didn't go on the deposit, if it hasn't gone on the mortgage, it's the even just removal expenses. You know, it just the money just disappears. So it must be quite distressing for some people when you come along and say, oh, by the way, you're going to have to get together and raise probably tens of thousands of dollars.
If not more. I mean, the reality is that for most people, they look at their brand new property and they say, well, Tim, everything's fine. You know, no, I don't see any water coming down the walls or, you know, issues with the fire safety measures. Unfortunately, a lot of these defects are things that the untrained eye wouldn't know, and that's why it is important to get an expert in to tell them what those are. You know, a lot of the time it's not glaring at them in the face, or at least not yet. It could be an issue that arises a few years down the track, so...
Mm. Yeah, and the other thing is that a lot of them don't realise there are time limits on these things.
Exactly. I mean, you would think that, I mean, the standard time limits are, you know, the 2 and 6 years with the major and minor defects.
Yeah.
But that time goes so quickly. Before you know it, you know, 2 years has passed within a blink of an eye. And bearing in mind that all of these reports and negotiations take a very long time, and as we know, you know, strata schemes are a slow-moving beast at the best of times, yeah. So be contending with that too.
Yeah, what do you think, people have unrealistic expectations of what strata managers do?
I think that they do, but I don't blame them for it.
Right.
I think that, you know, they tend to see us as the whole package, that, you know, strata managing agents expect to be an expert at a lot of different aspects. I mean, they call strata the fourth level of government after, you know, local councils, state government and the federal government. I mean, we're governing a building here which has a community of people. You've got your strata committee that's akin to a local council members. We're dealing with, you know, large assets from a financial perspective, managing large amounts of money. We're dealing with repairs and maintenance, you know, engineering, lawyers. There's a very broad spectrum of the things that are encompassed in managing a strata scheme. And so, you know, at the end of the day, strata managers are an expert in the Strata Schemes Management Act and running meetings and things like that. But realistically, I mean, what we're being asked to do is to manage the whole building and all of the people within it. So that takes a bit of, you know, almost psychology at some times.
Yeah.
It certainly takes, you know, a group psychology and knowledge in different facets. So I don't blame people for wanting that. But at the same time, it's important that owners in strata schemes understand that strata managers aren't experts in everything, and that we rely on, you know, the likes of insurance brokers and other experts to assist us in doing what we do for them.
Right. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot here. What would be your choice? What's the hardest to handle, a small, intensely dysfunctional building or a large new building where nobody knows what they're doing?
Look, I would say that it's a good question. I'd still go with the smaller, dysfunctional one.
Yep.
Because at least there is a solid framework, you know, legal framework, I would say, to resolve the issues.
Hmm.
A large building with, I guess you'd call them uneducated owners.
Yeah.
A lot of time is spent simply, you know, taking them to school and teaching them things. It kind of takes away from us being able to do our jobs.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, them making decisions. I mean, at least in a dysfunctional building, a lot of the time they can't make decisions. But then again, you know, they have the knowledge and expertise to sort of get on with things.
Right.
Whereas a large building with a lot of people that aren't so educated will really rely on your expertise, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just means that you're having to spend a lot more time explaining things to people. But, you know, at the end of the day, once they realise, once they've learned, then they can be fantastic to manage, particularly when they've gone through that learning process with each other. I mean, I've managed a few buildings that I've managed for a few years that are newer and have newer people in it. And those committees have grown together and learned together, and now they work together. They don't work against one another. So,
right.
You know, there's upsides to that as well.
Right. You mentioned the fourth level of government. Would you think that there should be compulsory voting in strata as well?
Oh, as in owners having to vote on certain issues?
Yeah.
I think for certain matters, yes.
Right.
But you have to allow for the donkey vote.
Right.
You don't want people voting who don't know what they're voting on. Because
right.
Because it can dramatically change the outcome of an issue that,
Well, that's going to change the election, isn't it?
Well, people, right, exactly.
That's how democracy works in this country.
Absolutely. I agree that I think that certain issues absolutely have to be voted on by everyone. And
do you think there should be compulsory training for strata committee members?
I think that, yes, to a degree. I think that we need to also make sure that we're not putting up barriers to access, so we're not locking people out. But I certainly think that there should be, I mean, at the very least, you know, a small questionnaire that could be filled out online. Something very simple. I mean, it's like the first aid course, you know, they make it very easy for people to pass that because they want people to learn it and to be encouraged to, not to make it harder for them. So I'd like to see, you know, more qualification when it comes to committees. I mean, one of the things that I like to do is send them, you know, the Strata Living Guide from Fair Trading, which is a great little book, although unfortunately it's about 50 pages long and a lot of people don't want to make the time to read it. But I certainly do agree that there should be some level of knowledge that, you know, at least I think if we see more participation in people wanting to join committees, then perhaps they have to provide us a short, you know, resume or something to show that they're interested, because I think a lot of the time the issue is that people just want to be on a committee simply because they want to know what's happening.
Yeah.
And when it comes to voting on issues or showing up to meetings or anything, you don't hear from them. And it's very unfortunate.
Well, there's the other ones who, you know, just want to be on the committee to make sure they can get a bylaw passed to change, to put up an awning or something like that, and then they lose interest. I mean, I've got two theories. One is that you allow them to be paid if they've passed a basic strata law test, not even strata law, just bylaw test.
Yep.
And the other one would be nobody can be in an office like chair or treasurer or secretary for more than 2 years unless they've passed a basic test.
I think that's brilliant, and I certainly agree. I think more committee members should be paid. We have so many line items in the budget for various expenses. Why shouldn't we be adding something in for the committee members?
Yeah.
They do a lot of work.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time you'll go to a meeting and you'll see other owners criticising them.
Yes.
The response is, well, you know, pull up your socks and join on the committee. Oh, no, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Well, I had one of our regular flat chatters who's been running a committee in the ACT, but he said, you know, the last AGM, they had this guy shouting at them, why didn't you tell us about this? And he said, well, we did. We sent you emails. We sent you letters. And the guy said, well, you should have followed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have heard a few like that, I'm sure. Okay, I'm talking with Tim Zara of Strata Choice. When we come back, he's going to tell us all about his best and worst experiences as a Strata manager. That's after this break. Okay, Tim, so you're going to give us your best and worst times as a Strata manager. I'm sure there's a few good ones.
I think so. A lot of it, unfortunately, a lot of it does relate to these defects that we were talking about earlier. Some of the best experiences I've had has been related to these, and a lot of the time it's because they drag on for so long. I mean, the first example I can think of at the top of my head is an 8-year defects battle with one of Australia's largest developers. I won't name names.
No, please don't. I don't have the insurance.
No. But it was, you know, it was a large company and a long battle. And I think for me that makes it all the more, you know, wonderful at the end of the course. It's such a relief to finish something like that when the final repair is done, when the certifier comes in and signs it off and says, yes, we're all done and all the defects of the defect repairs have been done. I mean, it's a long process, but working through that and coming out the other side and dealing with the clients, some of which, you know, some of the committee members there have been on the committee the entire time, others have come and gone, but it's so good to see at the end of that just the sigh of relief from everyone that we can now just get on with running the building day to day. And I mean, the building that I'm talking about is a block of 180 plus units.
Wow.
So it's not a small building.
Yeah.
And now I barely hear from them.
Oh, that's good.
It's fantastic. I mean, you know, not say anything bad about the clients. I mean, they're lovely to deal with, but I always say that, you know, a quiet building is a good building. There's no issues and nobody's complaining. And I mean, we used to go to the annual general meetings. There'd be 50 or so people, and I think last year there was about 6.
Wow.
Showed up, which you could say, some people say, well, that's kind of alarming, but I would say, well, if people are content and they read the agenda and they see all the items on the agenda and they don't feel the need to show up, well, to me that indicates that they're relatively happy with how things are going.
I think there might also be a case of exhaustion in there. That, you know, having been close to a big defects battle myself, at the end of it, regardless of the result, people were just going, okay, enough. I don't want to go to another meeting about anything ever again. And then eventually they come back. They start looking at the positives again.
Yeah.
Can you give me just a ballpark figure of what the defects in that building were worth and how much the legal fees were? Because people don't really grasp that.
Yeah, sure. From start to finish, the legal fees were, I think, somewhere in the vicinity of about $600,000.
Wow.
I've dealt with other cases that have been, to scale, a lot worse. You know, I've dealt with a block of 12 that, for example, over the course of the last 3 years has already spent about $350,000.
Wow.
I think they did relatively well in that large block.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we were looking at about, I think it was about $14 million worth of repairs.
Wow, $14 million. So it was worth going down that road.
It almost always is. That comes back to what we were talking about before, about educating the clients. A lot of the time, it's getting people to understand that, yes, you know, you are looking at a hefty legal and an expert's bill, but what is the cost going to be if you don't pursue this? And in their case, it was far more, you know, cost-effective to chase after it than it was to not. So I think they got a pretty good outcome there.
Yeah, good. And you mentioned before that one of your high points of your career was attending an opening party after an upgrade.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a building that I've recently taken on, but they've completed, I think it was about $700,000 worth of remedial works for their pool and the little barbecue areas that they've got on site there. And so they decided to have an opening party for all the residents. And, I mean, look, it's all well and good and lovely to go down there and meet these, you know, new clients of mine. But just the fact that they had a party.
Yeah.
A lot of these buildings will complete these projects and, you know, at the very best might send a letter around to everyone saying, oh, just so that you know this work is done.
Right.
But this was a really good example of a community. It's a small committee and not a lot of owners participate at the meetings, but the residents were thrilled. This pool looks fantastic. They've got a little barbecue area just down in McMahon's Point there.
Yep.
So now they can all go fishing on the weekends and... use the jetty and all of that. So it was just lovely to see there was at least half of the building was there.
Right.
A block of about 90 apartments, you know, was there and all getting together. And I didn't stay too long. I don't know how late they stayed up, but it was certainly a pretty jovial evening.
Well, at least they didn't have to drive home. That's exactly.
It was just up the... Well, it was a pretty steep set of stairs, though, but I'm sure they all made it up okay. And brand new set of stairs, I should add, so it should all be occupational health and safety and friendly and all of that. So.
Glad to hear it. Now... We're going to go to the dark side now. Your worst memories of things you've been involved in as a strata manager.
I think one of them is, unfortunately, it's not a memory yet. It's actually still ongoing. This is an insurance claim that I've been dealing with since February 2017, and it's technically still ongoing. Basically, lot owner had renovated their unit, and they'd done it quite a high-end renovation.
Yep.
And then towards the completion, they were installing an air conditioner, and the tradesman left the air conditioner's service manual in the guttering. And we're talking about February, so this is, you know, storm season.
Right.
Storms. And so, of course, the thunderstorm rolled in, the unit flooded, and the claim is around about $240,000. Now,
yeah,
that's our expenses, and then they've got their own contents insurance dealing with other parts of it.
Right.
The assessors went out, they identified that part of the reason was due to the service manual blocking the gutters, and then another part of the reason was that the gutters or the roof just hadn't been designed to cope with the level of rain
right.
that there was. And the interesting thing was that the owner's father was the developer, who essentially had designed the building, and therefore we pretty much argued that it was entirely their fault, but
right.
the insurers didn't see it that way.
Okay.
They gave us a quote for the repairs, but of course the owners, and understandably the owners, wanted to have their builder who did the renovations for them also do the repairs.
Right.
And the other owners didn't see an issue with that. I think that's fair enough. But the problem was that there was a pretty large disparity between what the insurer's builder was quoting and what their builder was quoting. And so we went down the path of getting legal advice, and we essentially wanted to have a deed drawn up which would say, well, you can pay for everything over and above what the claim will pay out.
Yep.
And if there's any variations or anything else, then you guys are responsible. And
yeah.
this was all on the basis that the lot owners were going to pay their own, pay for the owners' corporation's lawyers. So it was our lawyer that they were going to pay for it. Unfortunately, some of those bills weren't being paid on time. They were being paid late. And I think part of the reason for that is because the lot owners were going through a divorce, which made things even more complex.
Right.
You know, very unfortunate circumstances. I hope that the claim didn't contribute to that divorce, but we'll never know. We found recently that the building went to re-tender for its insurance, and the brokers were unable to find anybody willing to insure the building.
Wow.
They just were not willing to put themselves at the risk of being involved with this building. So, unfortunately, despite all of the costs, all of the hard work, the negotiations and everything, the committee had to turn around and basically tell the insurer to go ahead with their own builder.
Right.
And tell the owners of the lot that unfortunately, you know, we could no longer continue to use their builder. Because if we did, then it would delay the claim, and if we delayed the claim, we wouldn't get insurance.
Which is mandatory. You've got to have insurance.
Got to have insurance. I mean, it's, you know, probably the most critical thing for the building to have.
Yeah.
And we could not be in a situation without it. So they unfortunately had to make the decision. So despite all of the negotiations, all of the legal costs, everything that had gone on, we went back to square one.
Oh,
and we're now going ahead with the builder from the insurer. Now, whether the owners provide us with access to those works is another question. I mean, it's likely that they might turn around and say, well, we're going to fight this. So we'll see how that plays out. But that's probably one of the worst things I've...
And it's a recurring nightmare. It's not finished yet.
No, it's not over yet. And I'll be very glad to see the back of it, just like I was with the defects cases.
And what's this one you mentioned also about the smoker in the non-smoking building?
Oh, this was just frustrating. So as you know, a lot of buildings are now implementing non-smoking bylaws, and we had somebody that would sit on their balcony every day and smoke like a chimney.
Yeah.
Now that would just drift off around to all the other units. We had photos, videos. This was a tenant that, you know, we'd been struggling with for a while. We eventually made our way through to the tribunal.
Yeah.
And of course they moved out the day before the hearing, and so when we showed up to the hearing, they actually had the courtesy of showing up as well.
Right.
But the member, it was a directions hearing, and the member, I remember, fair enough, they said that basically that the owners' corporation should really consider dropping the case against the tenant, seeing as they were moving out, therefore the owners' corporation was effectively getting what it wants, which is the person to no longer be in the building.
Right.
I do agree with this, but at the same time, the committee felt that going into this hearing, they'd found out about the person moving out, and they sort of tossed and turned, do we proceed? And they said, well, look, the thing is that we wanted to set an example here. This is the first time that they'd ever pursued someone for a breach of this bylaw. And so they wanted to be able to show an example to everyone else, to say, look, if you're going to breach this bylaw, then here's a copy of the orders that we obtained for a fine to be issued. So they went through with it, and unfortunately they ended up losing. same member came back for the second hearing.
Oh, no.
And ruled against the owner's corporation on the basis the tenant was no longer a tenant, therefore that they couldn't issue the orders for a fine to be issued. It was very disappointing because then we had cases of other people in the building making comments at meetings that the tribunal application had failed. Well, what they failed to do is read the application, sorry, the orders.
Yeah, well, that sounds fairly typical.
Why.
Yeah. Do you find the NCAT tribunal... I mean, is it reasonably dependable, or do you get members who just turn up with their own, and put their own prejudices on the table and say, well, you might have this bylaw, but I disagree with it?
Well, I hope there are no members listening to your podcast here, Jim, but I tend to agree with the latter. I do find that it depends on who you get on the day, and that's no different from, I mean, a lot of...
Or district court or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, that it is what it is, and that's all part of it. But, yeah, I do find that, you know, if you were to get somebody different, then, you know, if you'd frame the exact same argument,
yep.
That there'd be a different outcome, you know. And that, I guess that's just, unfortunately, that's just part of it. I mean, we are people, and people are entitled to their own, you know, prejudices and opinions and all of that. But
you wonder, it makes you wonder about the law. You know, the law says you can pass a bylaw and the bylaw is valid, and if you breach the bylaw, then you can be fined. And then you go to the one body that can actually implement the fines, and they go, and somebody, and they, as you say, depending on who you get, you could get somebody who goes, yep, this is clear, you know, fine $220 or whatever it is. Or you could get somebody who goes, oh, I don't believe people should be prevented from smoking.
Well, you hope you don't get a smoker on the day.
Well, they die eventually. That was a bit dark. And on that note, we do need a sense of humour, I think, to be a strata manager. So when we come back after this short break, we're going to get some funny stories out of Tim. That's straight after this. All right, Tim, it's time to cheer us up. What are your funny stories? You must have a few.
Look, one of them's not my own, and I don't know if it's funny or if it's, you know, ha-ha funny, or if it's just funny as in that's a bit odd, but one of the stories that I've heard around the traps over the years was an owner who submitted a motion, and of course we know that owners are entitled to submit whatever motions they like, but I think this is an example that I've used from time to time. The owner submitted a motion that essentially to the effect of that no Vietnamese should be allowed in this particular building. Now,
right.
This building that I'd heard was out, I think it was out in Cabramatta, so
all right.
that you would even put that in the first place. But, I mean, I'm assuming that the chairperson ruled that out of order because it was in conflict with some kind of United Nations convention or basic human rights. But it just, I just think it was so strange that someone would even put that forward and put their name to it as well.
So
the name of the lot owner has to be put to the motion, and I don't know if they realised that at the time. They're probably quite upset when they saw their name on the motion, although then again, maybe they weren't upset.
Well, there's some people who get an idea like that into their head, and to them, it's kind of obvious that, you know, obviously it's wrong, but in their own mind, it's just so obvious. Why would anyone not agree with them? And suddenly they find that, well, A, it would be illegal, certainly under the restrictions on bylaws that don't allow them to be discriminatory. I think that's fairly discriminatory.
Oh, I think it's probably the most discriminatory you can get, but it just goes to show that I get this a lot from owners, you know, and they talk about, you know, well, he shouldn't be able to submit that. Well, at the end of the day, anyone can submit whatever they like, and I think this is a fantastical example of you literally can submit whatever you like. It's not going to get through, but it's there on record forever for everyone to see. So,
right.
There you go.
Yeah, and there's another one you mentioned about excessive sexy noise from an apartment.
I believe the technical term was an orgy, but it was some kind of party
right.
That was happening. And I think we have an emergency after hours team.
Right.
Who, you know, they'll take calls about burst pipes and fires breaking out, you know, when the strata managers aren't working in the office, of course.
Yeah.
And occasionally they'll get calls about silly things like overdue levies and, you know, maybe it's about the noise from next door. But I do know that they did get a call or two about this particular party, and I think the person on the end of the line was sort of unsure as to how they could help these people, short of driving out there and knocking on the door, which I don't think anyone particularly wanted to do.
No, I wouldn't think so.
The suggestion that we'd make, you know, if your neighbours are being noisy, then just go and knock on their door and talk to them. But I don't think anyone wanted to touch this front door because they were hearing all sorts of noises throughout the night. You know, there was a few different breaches of bylaws. I mean, noise comes to mind. There was certainly disposal of rubbish and other goods on the common property because there were some panties and sex toys found in the common area.
Oh, God.
The next day.
Oh, God.
What I found interesting about this was that they didn't seem to really care at all. You know, it was obvious that what was going on, but I don't know, maybe they were leaving the next week or...
Yeah. Or well, there's always that. There's the party trash, the flat trashing party.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it wasn't an Airbnb. This was back before Airbnb.
All right. Okay, well, I'm glad you cleared that up. I must tell you a story of my own. Somebody wrote to me years ago on the Flat Chat website, and they said... This somebody had moved in, this very nice young man had moved into the apartment next door. But every morning, early in the morning, she would hear loud groans, almost inhuman groans, followed by a thump. And this would be repeated and repeated, and it would get faster and faster for about 15 minutes. And then he would clearly stop, have a shower and go out to work. And then at night he would come back and the same noise would start up again. And it was even worse at the weekends because he'd do it morning, midday and nighttime.
Oh, God.
And she said, the funny thing is there doesn't seem to be any partner around.
No.
It's kind of weird and I don't know how to deal with this to say to him, you know, your sex noises are a bit too noisy. They're right next to my bedroom. And I literally puzzled over this for a weekend. And it was when I went to the gym that I realized what was happening. The guy was lifting weights.
There you go.
So it's just as well she hadn't knocked on the door and said, can you keep the sex noise down? He's going, I'm not even having sex.
By himself as well. She didn't have a spotter or anything.
Exactly, exactly. And now I'm going to put you on the spot one final time.
Yep.
And this is... As I'm cheating here, because this is a post that's come into the Flat Chat forum today.
Okay.
What can we do about religious proselytizers? They get access into the building, they knock on everybody's door. We've all got together and said, we don't want to learn about whatever religion it is that they're flogging. We don't want them knocking on the door. Some of us are shift workers and we get woken up. What can we do?
Someone asked me this in a meeting just the other night, and they decided that they would install a security door and intercom system.
All right.
Not just to deal with this, but they did say that, you know, I think someone from Clive Palmer's United Australia Party was going around knocking on people's doors, and they said, oh, that would deal with him. I mean, there's a couple of ways to deal with it. One is to answer the door naked. I don't know if that's legal, but I'll certainly get out of the building.
Yeah. That was my first thought as well, funnily enough.
It's a great way to deal with it. Well, it depends what kind of religion. If it's one of those cults, then maybe not.
You might get abducted.
You know, intercom systems, it's easier said than done with...
But my other plan is water pistols.
Water pistols, I like that. Put a little bit of vinegar in there or something.
Mate, your brains must be connected. That's exactly what I thought as well. So that it's not just water, they're going, oh, this smells bad. What did he put in the water pistol?
Yeah, exactly. Put something really foul smelling in there and then that'll hopefully get rid of them. But yeah, I think that's the best way. Aside from being naked at the front door, which might be some kind of indecent exposure, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you should put up a sign saying devil worshippers only.
Yeah, exactly. Put an upside down cross on the front door or one of those pentagrams or something.
Oh, we're getting into dark areas now. Tim, thank you so much for your time. It's been very helpful. Tim is a senior Strata manager with Strata Choice, our major sponsor, and has been for many years, and it's great to talk to you.
Thanks, Jimmy. You too. Love your show, and can't wait to talk again soon.
Let's do that. Cheers, Tim.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today. My thanks to Tim Sara for his wisdom and insight. If you enjoy these podcasts, please subscribe through whatever service you get them. It's entirely free. And if you have any other questions about Strata Living, come to the Flat Chat website. That's flat-chat.com.au. I'm Jimmy Thompson. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.